We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. Welcome back, folks. I owe you guys something, and I don't want your hopes.
You do.
Oh man,
I got a bone to pick with you. Besides the rap thing, which is hilarious, and You didn't. I don't think you set a timeline on when you would deliver this rap. So, but So I don't remember if I said this verbatim, but I'm pretty sure I tried to pick the exact day that the Griffin announcement broke, but you wouldn't let me because you wanted a date between that the recording date and the end of the season. And so I picked the very last day. I could be making that up, but I feel like I may have said something about picking that Friday.
I don't believe you. I think that's fake news.
Well,
I do think Ryan Hebert picked that date, either on Twitter or in text somewhere. I just remember him picking that Friday. But it was, yeah, whatever. Screw you guys.
Oh, man. What I need to do is I need to re-listen to the whole thing and just our conversations about what we expected and just how quickly they were just – for our track record of – predicting stuff that was going to happen. I think the Pelicans just said, screw these guys and needed to make us wrong. I'm convinced now that's what happened.
The old reverse jinx, you know?
Yeah.
McNamara bestowed us with his powers and I was able to reverse jinx the Pelicans into hiring David Griffin instead of Danny Ferry, which by the way, the Pelicans hired David Griffin. It's what we're going to talk about on the podcast today. Mason, I want to get your first reaction on – I know we do this a lot, but I think it's important to kind of set the picture here. What when Woj tweeted this, what were you doing? What was going on? What were your first thoughts?
Dude, Woj is an asshole, man. We have a – so at my company, we have a work happy hour on the calendar the first Friday of every month. And sure enough, I literally – just sat down with some coworkers to grab drinks and I get the notification. I'm just like, come on, man. Like of all times, better than like being in a meeting, but like, trying to socialize with colleagues. And then I'm seeing this huge news, which is like, obviously, really, really, I think, and I think most people agree, a pretty positive development for the franchise. So, that's what I was doing. It reminded me of when, we had the, I remember exactly when the Nico trade news broke with the Bulls last season, and I was sitting it was restaurant week in Chicago, and me and a few coworkers went to grab, there was like a good restaurant week special for lunch at a nearby restaurant, and so we popped in there, and as soon as we sat down, that the Nico Mirotić trade news broke. So I'm getting used to stuff like that at this point, but what were you up to?
So it was a weird day for me because I was still in fact-finding mode. And I was like, man, it's been a while. They really need to release something. I had heard prior to that that the announcement was supposed to come that Friday where it wasn't, you know, when Woj tweeted his tweet. And then, you know, they wanted to get the presser done by Monday. But Friday morning, I got a text that said, something changed. There's going to be an announcement on Tuesday with a presser likely on Wednesday. That morning. And I was like, oh, what does this mean? And I was basically told not to read too much into it, that it was just like the Pelicans organization just taking their time because they probably have their own guy and there's no rush to do things. And I was like, okay. So briefly I had my hopes up, and then I was like, oh no, they just, you know, if you're not changing things from Danny Ferry, it's not like you're gonna have a day of orientation, or, you know, things don't change. So I was like, whatever, I guess it makes sense. They're not rushing into it, whatever. And so still, I had, before the news broke, literally I had gotten off the phone with Fletcher, and we were talking about different things we had heard and exchanging some information. And both of our informations like basically lined up, that the finalists were David Griffin and Danny Ferry. It was looking more like Danny Ferry. If Ferry got the job, it's likely that Alvin would be out as a coach, but, you know, the ownership was looking to keep him around in a different capacity. And then there was news a little bit earlier that Ty Lue may be a candidate for the Lakers job. And if that's the case, you know, it turns out Alvin is good friends with Ty Lue, and there's a strong chance of him ending up on that staff. So like, that's where we were at. Fletcher was about to send a tweet. He did send a tweet, actually, basically relaying that information. Oh, and then the tweet also said announcement to come Tuesday. And
which he did.
So we were right about all those things, except for the fact that, you know, it looked like Ferry was a favorite, and then it turned out to be Griff. But the tweet said the finalists are Griff and Ferry. So, like, we weren't wrong about that tweet. But literally, I'd gotten off the phone with him. He sends this tweet, and Woj, literally, it's been maybe less than 90 seconds.
it was pretty immediate.
Yeah, Woj tweets, Danny Ferry has pulled out of the race. And I was like, oh boy. And I just called Fletcher immediately again. I was like, what just happened? And he was like, yeah, I think we should take our tweet down. I was like, yeah, probably. And
Did he delete it?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I didn't actually look to see.
Yeah, I think so. But and so, you know, we took the tweet down, but and then, you know, Woj later tweeted shortly afterwards that David Griffin was finalizing the deal to become the president, or as we learned later, the executive vice president of basketball operations of the Pelicans. And to me, I was caught so off guard, because basically the weeks leading up to this whole thing, nothing pointed at David Griffin. Absolutely nothing pointed at David Griffin. Yeah. And let me tell you how this kind of went down. Early on in the process, there was a lot of smoke with Trajan Langdon. And that was not just around the Pelicans, that was around the league. He was seen as a, you know, a strong candidate for the job. A ton of people had great things to say about him. As the search went on, you know, his name was still there, but it became more and more, I guess, apparent. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but things seemed to point to Danny Ferry, and how, you know, there was words coming out of the organization that Danny Ferry is really taking the bull by the horns, and, you know, he's made a strong impression and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, Fletcher put out.
Which, like, can we talk about how that's, I don't think we mentioned it last week. That to me raises a red flag in and of itself. Like, what about his interview process really takes the bull by the horns in a way that he was not doing so in the 2 months that he has been interim general manager? Like, why is there something that he's done in that process that suddenly takes him up a notch? Like,
who knows? Who knows? The whole like, so yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to get at. You know, there was that. There was, you know, Jeff Duncan and Fletcher basically both releasing identical pieces. Well, I think Fletcher had a video segment, and then Duncan had an article. Basically identical pieces of information that categorize, you know, Ferry as a strong a great candidate, and how the Pelicans should give him another chance, and how, you know, his mistakes shouldn't be associated with Dell's mistakes, and yada, yada, yada. It was almost identical, followed the same format, and it read like a propaganda piece. And it seemed like, you know, the organization was telling them that, hey, you know, this is where our head's at the moment. And then that was like over the weekend. Throughout the week, signs just got stronger and stronger that it was Danny Ferry. And we reached a point on Thursday where it was like, and I think I made of the prediction before, like, you know, when we did the podcast on that Thursday, I was like, I'd be really, really surprised if it wasn't Danny Ferry, because that is exactly what everything pointed to. And then when the announcement happened that it was David Griffin, I was like, oh my God, what happened? What changed? Was there something in between? Was there like a falling out? Was Griff always their guy? Because, you know, previously when the interviews went on, they had released statements, like, not released statements, but like the rumors were saying that, you know, Trajan Langdon was unprepared for his interview, which is very surprising given, you know, everything that I'd heard about him. And then, you know, that David Griffin came off as someone who was arrogant. And clearly he didn't come off as that, because he got a second interview. And I think he's one of the only candidates that got a second interview. I mean, maybe that should have tipped us off from the get-go. It's like, okay, well, if he got a second interview, then they're seriously considering this guy. But something changed, and none of the information that was being floated around lined up with what actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to pause for just a second, because we got to hit our podcast, every podcast Lakers slander. And it's related to what we're talking about. But Stein's weekly newsletter just hit the inboxes, and I got to read one quote. So it says, in numerous rival organizations, there is both shock and relief that the Lakers haven't responded to the events of the past week by chasing the likes of Golden State's Bob Myers, San Antonio's Archie Buford, and Oklahoma City's Sam Presti. Just basically, it's about how them being complacent and accepting status quo, and talks about numerous examples where teams didn't do that, went out, and you know, and so Ballmer hired Jerry West. The 76ers tried to stage their coup to get Daryl Morey, and then it mentions the Pelicans. You know, quietly giving themselves a major credibility boost by convincing David Griffin, arguably the most accomplished executive without a job, to take on the challenge of rebuilding the Pelicans in the wake of Anthony Davis's trade demand in January. So just wanted to drop that in there. Another point.
That's big from a guy like Stein, who's saying the Pelicans gave themselves a major credibility boost. That's big from Stein. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten about the Lakers. I think, you know, we're gonna get there.
Yep.
We have time. It's a long podcast. I have ways to tie it into David Griffin. Namely, you know, there was a rumor that the Lakers went after David Griffin pretty hard, like Friday morning before it was announced that he was signing with the Pelicans. And he must have seen, you know, if that was true, he must have seen something in their ownership structure. He's like, nah, I don't want to deal with this. Or just, you know, he just was tired. dealing with LeBron. I really do think that he wants a chance to do things more slowly, quote unquote, the proper way here, rather than just trying to chaotically assemble a team around the best player in the league.
Yeah. Question. Do you, I don't remember, so I'm genuinely curious. Do you remember who leaked that about the Lakers potentially pursuing David Griffin?
Do I remember who leaked that?
Because if it was, by some chance, if it was Woj, what if the Pelicans leaked it and they knew that Griffin was going to be their GM anyway?
No, I don't think it was Woj.
Okay. Because that would have been hilarious if the Pelicans knew that they were going to get David Griffin, leaked it just so the Lakers, so it seemed like they were getting another win and forcing the Lakers to take another L. I think that would have been great. But yeah, probably not the case.
Yeah, probably not. In any case, I agree with Stein. I agree with what a lot of people have said over the last week, that signing David or hiring David Griffin sends a very strong message, not just to the locals or and the current team and their staff, but to the whole league, that the Pelicans are not playing around. And that was my biggest concern with Danny Ferry, is hiring him has the optics of making the easy move.
Same old Pelicans, right? That's what people would think.
Exactly. So I'm satisfied from an optic perspective, just because I feel pretty confident that David Griffin would not have been, he would not have accepted the job unless he was given assurances that he would have the capacity to hire a bigger staff. He would have a bigger budget. He would, you know, be promised XYZ things that the Pelicans did not have before.
Agreed. I think that ties in pretty nicely to a recent article that came out on bourbonstreetshots.com. Have you read it?
You know, I've heard of the guy who wrote it. It's an interesting character, Mason Ginsburg.
Yeah. Interesting is the nice, one of the nicer things I've been called this week. So thank you.
Mason, why don't you tell us, you know, what was in the article?
Yeah. So, you know, we were talking, Jason, Schmidt and I were all kind of talking about this when the news broke and a little bit more on Saturday morning. And, you know, I haven't written much lately, and I tend to write more stuff in the off season because I enjoy kind of crunching the numbers and writing about the cap situation and what the Pelicans situation, you know, what their outlook appears to be. But this, I don't know, I just felt like there was a good reason to write something to really get the fan base invigorated, because there's been a lot of BS lately and there's been not much reason to be excited except for the consistent L's that the Lakers were taking. Like that was many Pelicans fans' main sense of enjoyment over the last 2 months. Like, unless you like or have this weird enjoyment of the tank race and watching to see how many games the Pelicans can lose to get in position for, for a better pick, that was all they had. It's all we had. And so this was a great reason to just, I don't want to say I wrote a puff piece because I don't think I did, but it wasn't this, you know, deeply, it didn't take as much research and kind of investigative journalism like you did, for example, in your building Gail Benson piece or Jason did, but just talked about all the reasons beyond Griffin himself being a good executive, all the other reasons why fans should be excited about the move. And so, you know, whether it was the promise of increased investment in the staff and the scouting department, you know, Scott Kushner first reported that that being kind of table stakes for a guy like David Griffin, you know, getting a guy who's turned down some other positions. You know, Griffin passed on the Nuggets job in 2010. He turned down that New York Knicks job because he didn't have the authority that he wanted, and the Pelicans were willing to give that to him because they wanted to trust him and give him, you know, the keys to the franchise, essentially. As far as an identity, the Pelicans really, they've been looked at so frequently as just the other team in New Orleans, and they're a football franchise. And I think this really shows, to your point earlier, Schmidt, that we've got we're trying to bring the sense that this is a basketball team that's doing things the right way. They're focused on succeeding in the NBA, not just kind of winging it as like the redheaded stepchild of the Saints. And then I think finally, it's another point for Gail Benson. She's had detractors, and we've talked about that on prior podcast for no real reason. I think this is a great move to show that she cares about having this franchise perceived in the right way. And so just all of those things, I think, are all reasons to get excited about this move. Even if you didn't think that in a vacuum, David Griffin was the best guy for the job. For all those reasons and the fact that he's very well respected around the league, I think this is something to really be happy about. And for the first time in maybe since the AD trade request or even before, because the Pelicans were struggling, have a reason to be optimistic about the future.
I agree with you, and I think you did a great job on your article. I think I'm not 100% there yet. I think all the things are trending in the right direction. I do think that there is more from the organization we need to see, and I want to get into that on the back half of our podcast. But before that, I want to ask you a question. Our just honest opinion. Do you think that David Griffin was their guy all along, or something happened last minute with Danny Ferry, or I guess there's a third option, did Danny Ferry legitimately withdraw from the race because of the concerns he stated?
So my belief, and I have zero insight into what the franchise was thinking, is it was way too coincidental that literally minutes before the Woj announced the Griffin news, he also announced that Ferry was pulling his name out. I wouldn't go so far to say Griffin was the guy from the start. I think they decided on Griffin, and I think they have a positive relationship with Ferry, and I wouldn't be surprised if they worked with Ferry to kind of figure out how to communicate this best. That said, I could be totally wrong. Could have been this real situation where he decided that this job wasn't for him for whatever reason. Maybe he was even more demanding than Griffin in terms of what he wanted to set up the franchise for success, and they wouldn't give it to him. I hope that's not the right reason, but really don't know. I assume you have a perspective on this as well.
I have a conspiracy theory on this.
Oh boy, here we go.
It's an informed conspiracy theory, but it's a conspiracy theory nonetheless. I think Danny Ferry got Game of Thrones. I think he was like Littlefinger, and he got outmaneuvered. Here's why. Basically, everything I've heard about the interview process is that there was a significant emphasis placed on how the candidates felt about Alvin Gentry and, you know, what their perceptions of him were, how they envisioned working with him, you know, how they view him as a coach, all those things. It's not exactly a secret that Danny Ferry does not like Alvin Gentry. And I think the feeling is mutual.
You say that, but I don't think that's something that's kind of well known externally. I don't think it's I don't think it's something they're trying to keep as a secret, but I don't think it's something that a lot of people know about.
I don't think it's known externally, but I don't think it's a well kept secret. I think you know, you basically talk to anyone around there, like I think it's pretty obvious. What's funny about it is, you know, it kind of goes all the way back to 2017, last year. Sorry, yeah, last year. It goes back to last year. I don't know my years. Sorry, guys. It goes back to last year after the Boogie injury. And Danny Ferry was applying a lot of pressure on Dell to fire Alvin. Then and there, you know, around All-Star break. And, you know, his whole idea was, you have Mirotić, let's go in a different direction. Let's go on this run. We can still salvage this. Now, the Pelicans ended up going on this run anyway with Alvin. And Alvin and his staff, their contracts got extended going into the summer. But, you know, that Ferry had been telling Dell on and off that he should look into someone else other than Alvin. And Alvin was aware of this fact. And so,
which great job, everyone involved, with being that transparent about it.
Yeah, right. Well, I think I'm not 100% sure in this. I think Dell just told Alvin, like, hey, this is what Danny wants me to do. But in any case, you know, fun stuff. Clearly, you've been a very cohesive leadership group behind the scenes. And, you know, Dell was fired. I don't think that, you know, Alvin thought that he would last much longer given that Ferry was interim. And I don't think that and what's interesting is after Dell was fired, the whole front office kind of became a little bit of a chaotic mess because, you know, once your leader is gone, you don't know who's really, you know, like what the hierarchy is. You don't know who's going to stick around. And I heard it was a little bit of Hunger Games kind of going on there with people going into full survival mode. What people don't understand is Alvin Gentry has been in the league for 30 plus years. He is a survivor at its finest. And Alvin Gentry, I don't believe for a second that Alvin explicitly told Gail Benson or any of the ownership anything negative about Danny Ferry. I don't think Alvin had anything to do with this search directly at all. What I do believe is that Alvin is a really smart individual, and he politicked his way into gaining Gail Benson's favor so that, you know, when it came time to interview people, he was a big component of the interview. And that's why you're hearing things that they want to keep him on as a consultant, or, you know, he might stay anyway. And I think also it benefits the organization, who look at Alvin and they say, hey, he has 2 years left on his contract. 2 years. And we don't want to be paying someone to not do anything for 2 years. Like it or not, I do think that is how the organization looks at things. And I think there was a situation where Danny Ferry didn't pass the Alvin portion of the interview. And when push comes to shove, if you're looking at two equal candidates, that may have been the tiebreaker for ownership. The conspiracy theory part of it is that someone threw him under the bus, given the Hunger Games nature of the front office, that someone, you know, just went to ownership and spilled some tea on Danny Ferry and made it so, you know, it wasn't a good situation for me. I don't have any sources or anything to back that up. That's just mindless speculation. But I do think that when ownership interviewed David Griffin and they asked him about Alvin Gentry, he was like, yeah, Alvin's a cool guy. I worked with him in Phoenix. And I think when you look at different priorities, if I'm David Griffin and I recognize that ownership is placing a lot of priority on a guy like Alvin, I'm going to try to leverage that into a better situation. What I will try to do is be like, oh, you know, I don't know. I want to hire my own coach and my own staff. And then they're like, oh, no, Alvin's important to us. And then you're like, fine, I'll let you guys have Alvin if you give me these things. You know, it's kind of like a trade-off. And I think at some point ownership reached an agreement there with David Griffin that they could not reach with Danny Ferry. So that's my speculation. I think I'm with you. I don't think, I think it's way too coincidental that Danny Ferry backed out immediately before the release that David Griffin was finalizing a deal. I do think the organization probably had the courtesy to inform Danny that unfortunately we're not going with you. And that's when Danny to kind of, I guess maybe PR manage the situation, release a statement that I'm withdrawing from the race. I'm 100% with you there. But I think there was something, I think Danny got Game of Thrones a little bit. I think Danny's like Littlefinger in this situation, which if you don't watch the show, then I'm sorry. This whole reference, you know, falls on, I don't know. It goes over your head, but that's my theory.
Interesting. I've thrown out more ridiculous theories than that, so I'm not gonna throw stones at it. But I'm glad. I mean, it was super coincidental. So I think, like I said, we're in alignment on that much.
Cool. Okay. Well, I think that's a good spot for us to take a break and talk about our sponsors for a second.
At Blue Wire, we don't just partner with any advertiser. We want to make sure we're giving our listeners a good deal on a product. That's exactly why we love doing business with Harry's. Harry's is giving Blue Wire listeners a shaving kit for just $3. Go to harrys.com/bluewire and you'll save $10 on a trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. If you're not familiar with Harry's, it's time you should be. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Barry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
Okay, welcome back. We kind of left off the last segment talking about coaches and how they may or may not have been a factor in the interview. Mason, I wanted to ask you, now that we have David Griffin and, you know, it's sent this message to the league that we mean business and David's going to go and make these changes, what are your expectations for him sort of going forward over, like, I want to say the next 3 months? I don't want to even draw a picture out for the long term at all, because I think these next 3 months are so really pivotal and going to define, you know, what the next 3 years are going to look like. So I want you to sort of, you know, describe your expectations, what you are looking for David to do right off the bat as he hits the ground running.
First thing is I want that staff built up quickly. Obviously you do your due diligence, you hire the right guys. I'm sure Griffin has guys that he has his eye on, and people who have worked with him before and they've had success. But you got to, especially at the scouting department, you've got a draft to think about that's coming up pretty damn soon. And so that's of utmost importance. Obviously there's probably going to be some carryover with the current staff. But as Scott reported, they're going to build out a little bit more. And so I think it's important to get that ball rolling pretty much yesterday, essentially. So that's important. And then the obvious big move the most important thing on everyone's mind is the Anthony Davis trade. And so the one thing I would really emphasize that I would do this no matter who is in charge is get the best package collection of assets, no matter what or who they are. So my point there is, you and I and Jason have been talking a little bit, even as early as this morning, about some of the other maybe one of or non-focal point trade contenders for AD. And so the Clippers, or as Jason refers to them, as the Sonics. and their prime asset. And I was pushing back at the start about the Clippers and not really loving what they could put together, but one of their prime time assets would be the 2021 Miami unprotected pick. And so while I don't think that Pat Riley is going to let that become a top five pick, I think given the state of the Eastern Conference, I think it would probably be something like top 10. I don't think there is a world where the Pelicans value that less because it's 2 years out. And I would strongly advise against that, just because it's an asset. It's something, and we've seen kind of the idea of a draft pick is often higher than the actual outcome of a draft pick. And so I think, even if you're going to use it and flip it for somebody else, I just think you make sure to value assets according to what their value would be around the league, rather than specifically what that value might be immediately to you as a team. And so those are kind of my imperatives. Obviously there's a lot more to talk about when you speak about the next 3 months, but I've talked enough. I want to hear what you think.
So before I give my opinion, I wanted to ask for another one of yours. You know, you mentioned building out the staff. Do you have an opinion on the reports of Griff giving Dell's current staff, and I'm not talking the coaches, I'm talking about the front office, you know, their fair shake and possibly keeping them on?
I think you interview for your own jobs. I think that's what any good business would do. I'm not saying you should just give them any sort of additional leeway. If he's got a finite budget for that team and you have guys who have contracts that extend into next season, and this was something I was trying to get a little more information on. I'm not sure at what level you have multi-year contracts in the front office, and obviously the GMs and above will, but at what point are you just kind of year to year? But I think you have to consider that as a factor. But I wouldn't just jettison everyone for the sake of bringing in your own people. And like the report said, I mean, I think there's reason to expect some of those ops guys will be back, and then there'll be more heads added on top of it.
Yeah, I think I'm generally with you, Although I think there is some benefit to just cleaning some of the current staff out, because I think when you look at Dell's tenure overall, this is kind of the staff he's had for a very long time. And so if you're trying to truly have a new vision, you want a new set of eyes. But I don't think it's a necessity, something that happened needs to happen immediately. I don't think it's something that, you know, Griff should, that should be like his first action item when he takes his office. Because ultimately I don't think, you know, these guys are terribly expensive from all everything that I've heard. And so you could keep them around, you could have them do some of the grunt work and, you know, have them do things that the higher up people that he's going to bring in over them won't be doing. And I think there's still a utility that can be found. But I do think in the long run, you want to kind of slowly fizzle those guys out, or maybe put them in a position like where you're telling them like, hey, like, you know, this is the role that we can offer you, up to you that, you know, if you want to take it or not. And yeah. So I'm not livid or anything that if people stay. I also agree with you that fleshing the staff out, you know, adding the layers as soon as possible is important. And I think that's one of the things I'm going to be looking for as sort of a benchmark for ownership, because depending on who he brings in and how many people he brings in will kind of signify the power that ownership has given him and the level of commitment they have towards him. So if he's able to bring in, you know, a GM, and there are some names out there that would not come cheap, I don't think. So if he's able to bring in a GM, because if you hire a guy with the title of GM, you got to pay him like a GM. If you bring in several assistant GMs, you have to pay them like assistant GMs. So these aren't just like your regular basketball ops people or just front office people. These are guys with actual titles. And if he's able to pull moves like that, that signifies to me that, you know, ownership is serious. They're fine paying, you know, some of the current incumbent people as well as expanding what they have going on. And I think it's important for him to get that in place because the draft is right around the corner. We're looking at a situation where we might have multiple picks, and then we have to deal with the Davis trade, which is going to be related to the draft. And getting out in front of that, doing all your homework now, which I think using some of the current knowledge with Danny Ferry, who's going to help him transition, and some of the current staff is going to be helpful there. But the more you can kind of set your structure in place now, the better. So I echo your sentiment there. Do you have an opinion on coaching changes?
That's a tougher one. It all comes down to kind of what you see Alvin Gentry's status in the long term being. I mean, does Gentry kind of know that he's I don't want to say lame duck, but like a transitionary head coach, and they may go in a different direction? If so, that maybe like we talked about, like keep Gentry on the staff or within the organization in a different capacity. Because I mean, you've got to let Gentry have some sort of control over his staff, right? I mean, it's tough. I mean, you have two lead assistants that are well respected around the league, at least historically. I can't speak to what the Pelicans' recent performances have on either end of the floor have done for Finch or Ehrman, but those are two guys who have respect around the league. And so I can't say I would recommend any sort of major upheaval if the Pelicans are going to keep Alvin Gentry. But it's definitely it's more fluid of a situation, I think.
So on your list of priorities, where does coaching change fall under?
In the near term, pretty low, all things considered.
Okay.
Disagree?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I'm of the view that unless there is a top three coach on the market, pretty much the guys you're going to get aren't going to be all that much different. I think in the NBA, everyone borrows from each other. The X's and O's are going to be the same. I think it's going to be about reaching the players. I do think Alvin has had success in reaching the players here. I can't confidently say he'll continue to have that success, or if that is, you know, what we need for the long term. But I think it's not a bridge we necessarily need to cross now.
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, if after these playoffs a top coach became available for whatever reason, I don't think that David Griffin would hesitate to go after that person. So, but I do think that they're also fine keeping Alvin.
So that I sort of agree, but at some point I've got to wonder what the overall budget is that Griffin has. I mean, so if you talk about potentially adding a GM or an assistant GM underneath Griffin and the op staff, and then you talk about adding a top three head coach on the market, that coach is going to command a pretty decent salary. And so, I mean, there has to be prioritization there as well, right?
So how much do you think Griffin's getting paid right now? Magic Johnson got $10 million. I don't think Griff is getting $10 million.
No.
Dell was around $3 million.
Yeah, that's a really difficult question. I really don't have an opinion.
Split the difference, you get 6.5.
Yep.
Which seems fair.
It does.
Do we know like a lot? Do
we know the length of his contract?
I can't remember. No, I don't think we know anything about his contract.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's say he's around 6, right? Let's say you bring in a GM and you're paying him around 2, or assistant GMs that you're paying around 1 or whatnot. Well, let's just be conservative and say 2. So that's about $8 million that you're looking at. And then you're talking about coaches. I think if you tally all the coaches up, they might be. Let me do the math a bit. They might total up to 5-6 million themselves.
I was going to say 5, and yeah, 6. Let's say 6 to be conservative.
Right. Yep. So you're at $14 million between, you know, just a few executives, and
but then you've got to add in. Presumably, you have to add in if Gentry's whole staff got an extension for this next season. Was it just Gentry, or was it?
It was the whole staff. It was Ehrman and all that. Yeah.
So now you're adding more to that.
Which no. Obviously... I think Alvin's around 3,
mm-hmm.
and so I added the rest of his staff into. To reach the 6 number. I don't think.
Yeah. No, what my point was that, like, if you have that and if you move on to a different coach, you've got to include both coaches now for the next year, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you're right. What is the budget?
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I think we're in an alignment here that it makes way more sense to funnel your investments in the near term into the front office and scouting. And why pay 2 head coaches when you're pretty comfortable with the job Gentry's done? And the thing is, even if there's a top coach that comes on the market, you have to pay him like a top coach. And so suddenly who knows if the Pelicans or Griffin has been permitted to pay out that kind of money in year one. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gail.
I think given this organization, if it's a truly a top coach, they're going to go after talent. And I think that also is consistent with David Griffin's MO. Get the most talented thing out there. So I don't think that would necessarily prevent them from going after a top guy, but I don't think they're willing to like just open the bank for, let's say, Calipari just because he's a name. Nothing about him as a head coach.
Now that AD's walking, I don't think that's going to be in the cards ever.
Right.
Yeah. We'll certainly be interesting to monitor moving forward. Looking forward to seeing what comes out of the next few weeks.
Do you think that hiring David Griffin changes anything on the Davis trade front?
I got asked this same question talking to Christian and Bobby Hebert last night, and I laughed accidentally. I didn't mean to, but my answer is no. But they were framing it up as, is there any way AD changes his mind and stays, which is why I laughed. I don't think that's what you're doing. I think you're talking about just the potential suitors and how if where AD might get traded changes. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you think that David Griffin's more likely to do moves that Dell wasn't?
I don't know. I do have more confidence in Griffin's trade getting back a good return. I mean, Dell did a great job around the edges, but I don't know if we had enough evidence to be completely confident in his ability to nail a home run trade like this against up against top executives in the NBA. Whereas Griffin, I feel better about it, if that's makes sense.
Okay. I was mostly getting at, do you think he entertains the Lakers a little bit more? I don't think so. I don't think it matters. I think he's going to take the best deal.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. What do you think the weirdest question is going to be asked during the press conference tomorrow?
Oh, man. Oh, this is a good question. And we don't really – so for our listeners, we spend maybe about – typically we do a little bit of brainstorming right before we start recording, but we don't, like, share questions that we're going to ask. And this is one that I wish I could have prepared for, because I feel like this – there's something there's definitely a
I just came up with this on the spot.
Yeah, well, you clearly have an idea, because that's the reason you asked.
I really don't. Oh.
Man, okay. So I don't know. There's going to be stuff asked about, like, LeBron, right? And his relationship with him. I don't know if that's really funny necessarily.
Unrelated tangent, and I hate to interrupt you here, but no, I think, I mean, not unrelated. It's related, but it's a tangent nonetheless. People talk about his relationship with LeBron, but he had a relationship with Kyrie too. And Kyrie's with the Celtics, and I think Griff probably knows Kyrie better than any executive out there except for Danny Ainge, I guess, because he's been there. Does that play any role?
Yeah, so you're saying, why are people talking about one but not the other?
Celtics and be like, yeah, Kyrie's not going to bounce if you get AD. I know that. You know, sweet talk.
I don't know. I was in town for the Alvin Gentry intro presser, so I went to that, and there wasn't really anything funny asked, so my expectations for something silly are not terribly high. I know it's a lame answer, but I just don't expect it.
Okay, I think I'm gonna go with, like, the typical, like, New Orleans questions, like, have you had the food here? It's like, what? Why would you waste a question on that?
We'll see. I don't expect to learn much, but maybe I'll be surprised.
Maybe. Do you care about, like, specific names he might bring in terms of front office or whatnot? Is that even of importance to you? Or do you care more about the idea of just getting people in those places?
As far as number two guy, I definitely care. I trust him to make the right call, but I mean, I think you mentioned he has a prior relationship with Langdon, right?
He does.
Yeah. And so, like, that would be a great 1-2 punch, I think. And if we could offer Langdon a promotion and job title, and potentially salary, that might be enticing to him. But as it goes further down the ranks, I mean, I can't even pretend to know the difference as well as a guy like David Griffin would. So, no, not really. Once you get past that.
I'm glad you mentioned that you can't pretend to know the difference, because I think that's the honest truth about basically 99% of the executives in the NBA and even coaches, where we don't truly know if they're good or bad. And all we have to assess those claims or the results. And we don't know that who contributed what portion to those results. And oftentimes a lot of those results are circumstance and luck dependent, you know?
And this is my argument about the medical staffs for any team. But it does translate.
Right. I do think with medical staffs, I do think that some teams empower them a little more, give them a little more resources, and have more people around. But as far as, like, injury diagnosis and that kind of stuff, or, you know, freak accidents, just like a guy snapping an Achilles, or now Bogey tore his quad, which is really unfortunate with the Warriors. But that, you know, that kind of stuff is dumb luck. And we had all these guys spraining ankles or like breaking pinkies or whatever the hell. And people are like, it's the med staff. And it's like, sometimes it's just dumb luck.
Yep.
And but yeah, I think the same goes with executives. I think it can be dumb luck if a team lucks out. But I think only time you really know if an executive is good or bad is like when they're like abjectly awful.
That's fair. I mean, but I think you can also tell on the flip side.
Like Billy King, I think people recognize was awful. I mean, yeah, awful, like the theory, like the thought process did not make sense at the time.
Yeah, but you can see like there are GMs are that legitimately win trade after trade. I mean, everyone talks about Danny Ainge and I get tired of it, but I mean, they're not wrong. Like the guy's good, but to your point, even still, you don't know. I mean, that's probably, it's a lot to do with Ainge and his negotiation skills, but it's also the staff that he's built, right? It's not just him.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So. It takes a whole front office to do that. And even still, yeah, like, I think you talk about Danny Ainge winning trade after trade. Like, the Brooklyn pick and Isaiah Thomas and Jerry Crowder, people thought at the time it was a good deal. You know, no one knew, like, Isaiah Thomas would turn into a pumpkin.
Well, I think Ainge may have, which is kind of the point.
True. And I guess there is a point to say that, you know, maybe there's some shady stuff there. But even still, like, the Brooklyn pick, it was unprotected, and it was a really valuable asset at the time. Jay Crowder was seen as like, you know, wow, LeBron's finally got a 3-and-D wing defender. You know what I mean?
Who had a very, very fair or bargain contract even.
Right.
Yeah.
And who knew the Nets would not be bad enough and only landed them the 8th pick, which, you know, Colin Sexton's doing pretty well.
Yep. He's had a second half surge. It was pretty good after, I mean, kind of had a Trae Young-esque abomination of a first half and then came on strong at the end.
Yeah, I don't think you could rule him out. You know what? Something unrelated. I don't know why I got reminded of this. You know what's funny to me is the idea of Monty Williams coaching the Lakers.
I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know how you got there, but yeah, I've thought about the same thing. It's like I can't think of a market that fits him less, and like a player. I know they have a relationship from whatever it is, a prior Olympic team, or whatever, but it doesn't make any sense to me. I can't imagine him, you know, being the voice of authority in a LeBron locker room in the city of Los Angeles dealing with the media, you know?
My goodness. I don't think people understand. So, like, do you remember, first of all, the quote that Monty gave when he was with the Pelicans that LeBron is just playing in a boys' league or something like that? It was a game where it was – LeBron was still in Miami. He went off for, like, 16 straight points against the Pelicans in one of the quarters. It was, like, consecutive points. And afterwards, like, Monty gave some sort of quote about LeBron just playing in a boys' league and how in the 80s or 90s or whenever he played, you know, it was a man's league back then. And LeBron and his teammates were obviously took offense to that statement. So that'd be an interesting dynamic in the first place. But second of all, like, I don't think people understand, like, I people kind of know it, but they don't, like, know it. And Monty Williams as a person, who everyone knows, like, he is very religious, very in his faith and all those sort of things. But, like, it's to the – it's – he's – I'm having a difficult time describing
Yeah, I can tell you're being very deliberate with your word choice here.
Right. I'm trying not to be offensive. But let's just say, like, Monty is judgmental. And an example of this – is, you know, he's judgmental. He was judgmental towards people who drink alcohol. Period. Not like alcoholics. People who drink alcohol. Period. And so
is there a swearing thing too?
There might be. I know that he is upset. He is not happy with tattoos on players.
No, didn't know that.
And, you know, he had regular prayer and church meetings with team members, even though, you know, we had Muslim players playing for us. I think we had a Jewish player playing with us at one point. You know, players of different faiths, and it's kind of like, that seemed insensitive to me. But the idea of Monty Williams coaching a team that has LeBron James, who shows up to the arena with a wine in his hand, Kyle Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, who, you know, are all over Instagram, you know, just the idea of Monty Williams and that group of people, like, my goodness. And then, like, not even to mention that, you know, this year they had Beasley, Lance Stevenson, Rondo, and all of that. And I feel like if you're a judgmental person and judge basically a person's personality off the surface, or like silly actions like drinking or something, you're not going to have a good time in LA.
Yeah. And I mean, this feels like a little bit of Monty bashing. I don't want it to come off as that.
No.
Say. Like, I mean, there was, one of the most powerful pieces of journalism I've read in the last decade is about what Ryan Anderson went through here when his girlfriend committed suicide, and how Monty was the guy that was there for him through everything. And so, I mean, he is that kind of, I don't want to say crush, but he's that kind of guy for his players. I mean, he does that, and he's a very nice individual. And I mean, couldn't say any more nice things about him, about just the way he acts around his team. But I mean, there are these elements also that you mentioned that make it an interesting fit in LA.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, by all accounts, like, you know, Monty is like the most upstanding human being. Like, you know, he's just very genuine person. And he truly cares about his players and truly cares about the people around him. So definitely don't want to do any Monty bashing there. But another interesting element is, and I'm not saying but because I'm about to bash Monty, but another interesting element that, you know, people talk about, oh, AD was really good, had a really good relationship with Monty, and that's true. But what is funny about that is AD's dad absolutely hated Monty.
I didn't know that. And I did. Yeah, I remembered that AD and Monty had a really good relationship. So, yeah. But I did not know about his dad's feelings towards
him. Yeah. And which is funny because, you know, given what AD's dad has had to say about Boston, he's been in the news a little bit. Money stuff. Okay. Weird Monty tangent there.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, have we anything else we need to hit on? I think we can touch on more, AD trades, Zion or whatever stuff later on. We got plenty of time for that. Because another thing we didn't mention that happened since the last podcast is that the Pelicans won the coin flip.
They did win the coin flip. We got the seventh. Yeah. We're slated for the seventh best pick.
Yep. Unless so that's cool. That was a Friday was a real good day.
It was a good day.
Yeah.
It was almost too good to be true. It was like, what's going on? What's the catch here?
Yeah. So we'll hit that on.
I think there's just we're in an information gathering mode here. We're waiting for more stuff to come out. I think the press conference will be illuminating tomorrow. I think as the next couple of weeks, as David Griffin rounds out his staff, we'll have a little bit of a clearer picture of what the idea is here. And, you know, I think we'll have more thoughts when those new bits of information come our way.
Yep, for sure.
Cool. Thanks for listening, guys.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.